The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, everybody. 710 KNUS, Denver's talk station, Saturday morning, 20 April 2024. And the beat goes on. 42 will be the high. It's kind of an easy weather morning out there. It's cold, got snow, looks like Christmas. It'll all be gone tomorrow. 31 tonight, 68 on Sunday. We're standing by for George Brockler. I normally don't respond to these kinds of email, but I got to do this one. It says, your, quote, belief that Patsy murdered her daughter is no less valid than those people who believe the election irregularity swayed the outcome. No, ma'am. The answer is the grand jury in Boulder, Colorado, wanted to pull the pin on both of them and find them and try them for the murder of that little girl. Without further ado, he's a friend. He's running for office, a one-time talk show host. And I got to tell you, I got so many things to ask you about. And please say good morning. Welcome home to George Brockler. Hey, brother, good morning.
Pete, thanks for having me on again. You'll have to pardon the ambient noise. I'm stuck at an airport, so I apologize for that.
I thought maybe you had another kid.
Just as likely, but no.
No. First of all, as soon as you have to go, please make the call.
Of course. No, we're good.
I just finished a book called The Gotti Wars about how the feds get John Gotti, and the intrigue between the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, the Justice Department, is they just don't get along. It's amazing, and especially when Sammy Gravano, when they flipped Sammy Gravano. And I was telling Bonnewell about it. We had a conversation. And when they got back, and I just watched it in New York, choosing jurors. Can you talk about that for a little bit, please?
The choosing jurors for the trial?
Yeah, I mean, we just watched the whole thing with Trump choosing jurors, and you chose jurors, I know, for a big one. That was the Aurora Theater. But what are you looking for?
Honestly, you're just looking for people who can earnestly commit themselves to the process without bringing that baggage that everyone has to the forefront. You want someone who's willing to sit and listen to all the evidence, start and stop, and then follow the law, whether they agree with the law or not, independent of that overwhelming bias that comes with people who sort of prejudge the case or the individual. There's never been a jury selection like the one in the Trump case because there's never been a defendant like Trump.
That's right. Yeah.
And that is, I read something in an article where one of the jurors had said she really had no opinion about Donald Trump. I don't believe that.
I don't either.
I don't believe there's anyone on the planet Earth who doesn't have an opinion about Donald Trump, favorable or unfavorable. I just can't imagine someone's like, yeah, you know. I mean, guy has been the most talked about, most popular person for a long, long time. And so the challenge there isn't what do people know about the alleged crimes. That's part of it, the high-profile nature of the crime. But it's him.
Yeah.
It's him that he's the generator for the bias that you have to be on guard for.
You know, in this book, and I know you're awfully busy right now. If you get a moment, I'll lay it aside for you. But the first trial, when it's – remember Diane Jackalone, that woman, and she and Gleason, and they tried John Gotti, and he got off. And then when Sammy Gravano rolls over, he tells them that they had fixed the jury, that they found a guy. They paid him $30,000, which doesn't sound like much.
Wow.
And he threw that case. And the last thing they do after John Gotti is found guilty and sentenced to prison, the FBI goes, knocks on a guy's door, said, we're here. He had, you know, obstructed justice. But so when that I'm like you, when I listen to those people say you have to have no opinion about Donald Trump, who alive doesn't have an opinion?
That's right. But But that is less important. I want, if someone said I didn't have an opinion about Donald Trump, I'd get rid of them.
Yes.
Because I wouldn't believe them.
Yeah.
I would rather have someone say, yeah, listen, I'm not a fan, didn't vote for the guy, but can I sit here and listen to the evidence and apply it to the law? I can. Now, that's a person that at least comes across as more trustworthy. It's the people that are hiding their true feelings about someone that you worry about. You're really looking for jurors who will be candid with you about what's going on between their ears and behind their chest plate. And when you get those people, those are the people you trust.
Do you think there are people that want to be on that jury?
Of course.
Yeah.
In Aurora Theater, you had to be on the lookout for people. And there were people that were campaigning to be on that jury. And the way they campaigned was, you know, prosecutors would stand up and ask them a bunch of questions. And they were enthusiastic. Oh, absolutely. The death penalty. You know, I can sort of see it in the right keys. And then you'd have the defense get up and they could say, no, absolutely not. I can. And you'd think, my God, they're trying to be all things to all people. Get rid of them.
Yeah, Bonnewell, we sat in his office and talked about it. And I said, how do you know? I mean, it's, and I said, he was talking about there were these consultants that help you pick juries. Are they efficient? Are they effective?
You know, I've only heard about them because, you know, as you can imagine, when you're a prosecutor, you don't have resources to be going out and paying people that are, you know, psychologists or analyzers of other people. You as much go off of your experience and your collective gut. And when I say collective gut, if I'm doing a trial and I have the law enforcement sitting next to me, the filing detective, and that happens a lot, I will tell him or her, like, you've got to tell me who gives you the heebie-jeebies, because I'm a big believer in that sixth sense, right? If somebody rubs you the wrong way, don't care why. If you can't articulate it, I don't care. We're going to get rid of them. And that has served me well, but it's not flawless. I mean, listen, I clearly missed somebody in that Aurora Theater.
Yeah, I know.
Me and four other senior prosecutors, we just missed somebody that brought something to the table that we didn't get revealed.
No, I remember you talking about that afterward. George Brockler's here, 710 KNUS. When I listened to you with Billy and Jeff the other morning, really, I was going to the gym and I just sat in the parking lot. Your insights on the Columbine School massacre and then the 2012 Aurora Theater shooting. George, it's yours. What would you like to say to the audience about both of them?
Oh, the Aurora one's still pretty fresh, but you know what strikes me about Columbine on this day. And have you had Frank on yet?
Yeah, we did at 9 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed that. Trying to get myself here. Listen, I don't know that I can add anything to the discussion other than my unique perspective being impacted by it. I mean, it was a high school I had been in only a little more than a decade before, a lot, you know, because I was a rival high school. I was Bear Creek. They were Columbine. We'd have basketball games, baseball, all that stuff. And you just sort of take for granted, up until that moment in time, take for granted that anything horrible would happen. Pete, if you look at the things that we have had since Columbine, if somebody told you, hey, in the next 25 years, some of the biggest, worst mass shootings in this state and maybe in America are going to take place in the sleepy suburbs of Denver, you'd have said you are crack smoke crazy.
Yeah.
But here we are. We had Columbine. We had Aurora. We had Arapahoe High School. We had STEM. We've had, King Supers. We've had Planned Parenthood. We've had Club Q. I mean, it makes you look at your state in a different way, because I see all these things as anomalistic to who we are. But when they all add up like that, do you step back and go, is this who we are? I mean, what is it about us that we attract this kind of evil? I don't know the answer. And there's the ones we've avoided, like the two 16-year-olds from Mountain Vista. They were planning a Columbine-style massacre, but it got upended by text-to-tip and law enforcement. So, I mean, there's more out there that we have maybe inadvertently avoided, but what the hell's wrong with us?
I was saying earlier, we had a caller on. I can't tell you why, but I just read the life of Muhammad Atta, the lead hijacker terrible day.
9/11.
And I finished it. I didn't realize he was Egyptian, number one. I thought, you know, that whatever. But he was Egyptian. His father and mother, his father was a physician. They were upper-class people in Cairo. He went to a really major university, lived in Europe for 6 years. You know, it goes on and on and on. And I'm thinking about it, I folded that up, and I'm reading about Klebold and Harris getting ready for the radio show. And then you, we were talking about James Holmes, and is there a similarity? This is maybe one of those, you know, on your final exam, but Klebold, Harris, Muhammad Atta, James Holmes, what, are there similarities, do you believe, George, with these four?
I'd have to know more about Atta.
Okay.
But in terms of the ones that I've covered, the ones that I've handled, these are all people within a certain age range that have a grievance. They have some grievance that's eaten away at them. And for Aurora, it was a grievance against humanity. And maybe it was born of mental illness. I don't know, and I don't know that it matters, because he had a grievance against humanity for how humanity made him feel about his shortcomings. As you know, Klebold and Harris had grievances. They were never the ones that were publicized. You know, everyone thought, oh, they were bullied. It wasn't that. It was something else going on there. And that's common. And then you look at these two 16-year-old girls from Mountain Vista who would have pulled this off. They were two broken vessels that I don't know what they'd have done had they never met. But there was something about that synergy of evil that was created when they got together, where their grievances got amplified through the other person and got acknowledged. You know, like, yes, I agree. And they got to move forward. You look at the two shooters from STEM. Same thing. They each had their grievances, and they thought that this was the appropriate way to do it. I'm fascinated with the age range that most of these people are in. I mean, Aurora Theater shooter was, I'm not talking about Atta now, is old compared to all the shooters that I've dealt with. I mean, all these other shooters are in that 17 to 21-year-old age range. Aurora Theater shooter is 24, but he's still, you know what I mean? They're still young.
Yeah. And, you know, the murderers on 9/11, they were all young men. And they, I mean, your point again is well taken. They were, maybe they were, well, some of them, I just, from my reading, the so-called muscle, when they got on those planes, they didn't really truly know they were going into the buildings. They were just told that, you know, they were going to hijack, and didn't know what the pilots knew. But aside, they were still young guys. And, you know, it's interesting. The Columbine killers, for a year they planned, George, for a year. And Muhammad Atta and those guys, they planned for a year and a half. How long do you think James Holmes planned to do what he did?
2.5 months. That's, we know it because we know the steps that he started taking. It was in May 10th, that he made his first purchases. And it was a pro mask, a gas mask, and two tear gas canisters. And that was the first purchase of many, many that he would make that would lead him to do this.
Had he done dry runs?
No dry runs, but here's what he had done. Once he picked his location, and he goes through in his diatribe, you know, notebook, he goes through all the different thoughts he has on how can he kill as many people as possible. And he goes through biological and nuclear and says, no, that's too hard, too much stuff to learn. And could I do it this way? No, that's too much. And he settles on mass murder through firearms. He thinks it'll be easier to pull off. And then he has to focus on where to do it. He dismisses the airport, Pete, and this is eerie. He dismisses the airport in part because of the security, but more so because he didn't want the public to get the wrong message, because there was too much of an association with terrorism. And he said he didn't want people to think that was what he was doing, because the message he had was there is no message.
Yeah.
He just wanted to kill people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, his process, once he narrowed it down to the theater, the Century Theater, he then spent money, cash, because we had every other purchase he made through, you know, checks and PayPal and credit cards and all that. He used cash to sit in 9 different movie theaters and watch 9 different movies as he plotted out what was the best place for his killing fields.
George Baraka
settled on 2 of them. Sorry,
I was just going to reset. George Baraka, Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS. The the murderers on 9/11, they flew before. They rode it to make, especially the Boston team. And
wow,
you know, when Holmes confesses to the shooting, but he calls himself insane. George, was he insane or is this mentally ill?
No. Nope. Mentally ill, but not insane. That dude was as sane as anyone else in this way. Remember, sanity isn't a diagnosis.
Right.
Sanity is a legal standard. And the two things that have to be met are, did this guy know right from wrong based on societal standards of morality? Unequivocally, he did. He was texting his ex-girlfriend prior to this thing, talking about, I'm having these evil thoughts. I want to kill a great number of people. I mean, he knows it's wrong. The other part is that he has to be able to form the intent to murder another human being after deliberating on it. This isn't a guy who went into that theater thinking he was shooting aliens or demons who inhabited the bodies. He knew he was wiping out life, human life. Those two prongs being met, unequivocally sane. Was he mentally ill? Sure. Yeah, but so what?
Were you on the job, and were you allowed to see the so-called basement tapes of Klebold and Harris?
I did. I watched them a couple times. Steve Jensen and I did. And those are more things that will stick with me forever.
Yeah.
Just stick with me forever, man. And I know they said they've destroyed them, and I know that's probably for the best, but there's a part of me that thinks, man, I hope that the people that study human beings and stuff have watched those and been able to process what there is to take away from them, because I watched that thing, Pete. I don't think I blinked for the couple hours of video that they put on there, because it was like when you know what they're setting up to do, you appreciate the significance of the steps they're taking differently. Like, had you just seen that tape in someone's house, you'd have been like, well, this is bizarre. This is unhinged. Knowing what they did, I mean, Pete, the end scene here. Right. Like when Eric Harris stands up and looks into the camera at one point and says, hey, Mom, I'm sorry. And this isn't about you. Yeah. This is something I had to do. And then he asks Klebold, do you want to say anything? And Klebold says, F you, Mom.
F you, Mom. Yeah, I saw that.
F you, Mom. And then it goes dark. And then Harris comes back on at the right at the end. They're heading out to Columbine, Pete. Jesus. And he comes back on to kind of do this living testament will to his brother. And he tells his, you know, he's like, hey, you can have like my CD collection and my games above. Yes. And I'm like, oh my God. And then it goes dark. And then you know what happens. And you think, is there nothing that could have been done? Is there nothing that could have intervened between that and the evil that ensued? And I don't know what the answer is.
You know, I had this conversation with someone about the notion of good and evil. In the Second World War, when you think of what those men were capable of doing to other people, but did they think that they were doing the wrong thing, or did they think they were doing the absolute right thing to eradicate as many people of one race or another from the face of the earth? Did they think that was a good thing and it was the right thing?
This call is now being recorded.
Okay, whatever that means. Yeah, whatever that means.
What is that?
I don't know. I'm just kidding, J. Edgar.
Is it the Chinese?
Is this K-How?
By the way, for anyone recording, it's being recorded independent of that on the radio. on the podcast.
Where'd that come from? I don't know.
I have no idea.
My brother and I, when we get those phone beeps, we still say, "Why, J. Edgar, I'm just kidding."
To answer your question though, Pete, I do think that the Nazis, there are some Nazis who may have had to convince themselves, and they were easily convinced. They wanted to be convinced that what they were doing was acceptable, because I don't know how a human being can go through what they did at the volume and pace that they did it and not completely lose your mind. I mean, you have to be convinced that what you're doing is okay, but it is evil. How could you not know what you were doing?
They did. I mean, they absolutely did. They knew exactly what they were doing. They built, you know, factories to kill people in. And it wasn't just, you know.
Have you ever been out there? Have you ever gone out to any of those
camps?
Yes,
I have.
I went to Dachau.
Yeah.
And, they, of course, they call that a work camp.
Yes.
The one right outside Munich.
Yes.
And, man, and you've probably been the ones that I have. It's weird. And I don't mean weird like in a flippant way, but it's weird because when you walk around in there, it's almost like you can feel something there. I don't know if it's from the past or whatever, but you look around and your mind tells you what was going on with people. And you think, how did we ever get there? How did a people get there to exterminate these people?
Yeah. And Dachau was, although there are furnaces there, it wasn't a death camp.
There are, you're right.
The death camps were all outside of Germany. The real, you know, the Waffen-SS, the death heads people, they worked in, you know, Ukraine and Poland and places like that. But in that, Dachau was one of the very first ones opened up. And, you know, you can't explain it. I was in a stupor walking through that place. I really was. And then I don't know if you went over to the courtroom at Nuremberg. And
I have not yet been there. I would love to go there.
You and I should, maybe we should make that a bucket list. But yes. And first of all, it's a lot smaller than I ever imagined. And I've been reading about Nuremberg forever. But number two, you just, I say a pew, but you just sit in the bench. And, you know, they were all up there. There's Goering up there. You know, they're all on trial. And just an old bunch of beat up old guys, big fat guys. And look what they did. I'm never over that. I don't know.
There's one other book that I know you've heard of if you haven't read it already, and that is Dave Grossman's On Killing. And it's a book that tries to assess and go through how the military, through training, puts these young men and now women into a position to be able to pull the trigger and take another human life. And it's a fascinating read. It's not a difficult read. It's a fascinating – he'd be a great guy to talk to.
Okay.
This is a guy who also analyzed this from enough places that there's a methodology that you can use to break down people's, you know, natural predilections about killing someone else. You can do it, and we do it all the time with the military.
But the Germans, and, you know, I mean, Joseph Stalin probably killed six times more people than Adolf Hitler killed, or how many people died in Mao's Cultural Revolution, or, you know, when people start to get to those numbers, they're astronomical. You can't get your arms around it. But we can.
Or the Khmer Rouge.
But we can get our arms around Columbine, or we can get our arms around Aurora Theater, because it's a limited number, and it's senseless. Most of the people that George Brockler with Peter Boyle's 710 KNUS 25 years ago today was Columbine High School. And Klebold and Harris planned for at least a year, but as you pointed out, and I've talked to Frank so many times, what was their motive? George, what was their motive?
I'm not sure that they each had an individual motive that you could just attribute in one sentence. You know, Eric Harris felt aggrieved by his situation and some things in life. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but in the basement tapes that we referenced, he must have been the guy that owned the JVC camcorder.
Yeah.
Because at one point, it looks like he's in his room. He's in his bed, middle of the night. He turns on the camera with that weird light that comes on with it. And he just starts to say girls' names, presumably girls who he had either liked or who had shunned him or hurt him in some way. And he just says their names. And as he's going through the list, tears start pouring out of his eyes. And you think, is that it? I mean, is that part? Because he didn't target them. Do you know what I mean? But is that part of it? Was it part of that sense of inadequacy or hopelessness about life that led him to make this decision? Klebold, the tougher one, because everybody presumed that Klebold was the nice, affable kid who got turned to the dark side by Harris. I don't believe that.
I don't either.
Having watched the tapes with Klebold, he was as amoral a person as you could have found at that age, in that setting. But can I throw this out to you?
Sure,
of course.
We
talk about wrapping your arms around victims. One other thing I think people ought to appreciate about these horrific crimes, and that is there is all, you can call it luck, but I'm going to call it providence. there is always providence that plays a role in these things, because as you know, and I've heard you talk about this, Klebold and Harris's goal wasn't to go into that theater, or go into that school and shoot people. It was to have the bomb that they had pre-positioned blow up, set the school on fire, and pick people off as they ran out of the burning building. That didn't happen because the bomb didn't go off. They had planned over and over and experimented, but they couldn't come up with a charge high enough energy to crack open that propane tank. But the ATF guys said if they had, the entire cafeteria and the library above it would have been gone, would have been engulfed in flames quickly. And so we were spared something there. And I know that sounds crazy.
No, I talk about the blind, but believe me.
Same thing in Aurora. There were little things that happened, man. Like, you know, the police, the first responders were all supposed to be pulled away to the shooter's apartment because he booby-trapped it. But the booby-trap didn't work, not because it wouldn't have worked, but because the woman who came up there to check on what was going on, because there was loud music playing, he'd set it up that way. When she grabs the doorknob to the apartment that would have opened into some fishing wire that was connected to a thermos of glycerin that would have poured into a pan of potassium permanganate sitting on a carpet covered with gasoline, and he had these three other bombs, that would have happened. That would have worked. She lets go of the door handle because at that moment she remembers some story that she'd read or heard about where a neighbor checked on another neighbor. And when they opened the door, they saw that they had killed themselves in the middle of their living room. And in that moment, she thought, well, Jesus, I don't want to see that. So she lets the door handle go, man, and goes back down to the apartment. Little things like that. Like, he loses one of the tear gas canisters in the parking lot. And he's so laden with body armor and what, he can't get to it. So one half of the theater was unencumbered by tear gas as they tried to get out. His weapon jams. 65 trigger pulls into a 100-round drum with hundreds of additional rounds and magazines available, and it jams. And can't figure out how to unjam. These little things, which we don't talk about, in my opinion, even though evil was present, it was kept a little at bay by providence.
And then there's Timothy McVeigh. In a way, I'm always. I went and I got a federal, press pass, I guess you call it, so I could go one day in that courtroom and stare at Timothy McVeigh. Just big, raw-boned, Irish Catholic kid from Buffalo, New York. You know, the same sense I got when we testified against the people that murdered Alan Berg. A bunch of losers sitting there. Just, I mean, overweight, you know, loads. And I remember the first time I saw them in Seattle with that RICO trial, George, and I was, and when I saw McVeigh, and the same thing with when you see all the stuff about any of these characters, and they're, or even the guys who stood trial in Nuremberg, and I'm drawn to that, and I sat in that courtroom by myself for an hour, and they, you know, I could visualize them all being up there. And they have that what? Fill in the blank. I can't do it. How do you fill in that blank?
I don't know.
Me neither.
I don't know, man. I don't know. And I don't think we have figured out a way to predict or prevent this enough. And
I agree.
I don't want to turn this into a Second Amendment thing, but all these moves we make to keep communities from trying to protect these kids and themselves that limit that or take it away, it doesn't do anything to address the evil that's out there. And when it shows up, all we've done is make us a softer target. And I think about that all the time, man. Like, what? If STEM, I believe.
No, I agree.
If there had been a uniformed sheriff's deputy at STEM on a regular basis, walking around with a gun and a badge in the car in the front, I don't think these two attempt this. Now, do they do something else? Maybe. But I don't think they attempt what they tried in Classroom 107 because they're gutless.
Agreed.
These guys are all gutless.
No, I agree. I agree to everything you say. Where are you? Excuse me, George Brock or Peter Boyles? If you don't know this, George is walked away from talk radio and running for office. Plug yourself, George, because I'd had a conversation with somebody about your run. You are back in the game, if you would, please.
Yeah, back in the game. Listen, for the first time in 60 years, Colorado has a brand new district attorney's office. We don't change DA's offices in terms of jurisdiction or anything like that because of changing population. So it's been since about 63 since there's been a new one. Now we have a new one, and it's where I've lived for almost 30 years now. Douglas County, Elbert County, Lincoln County. It's very conservative. It will be the only Republican DA's office left in the metro area and one of three between the border with Wyoming and the border down south, which is hard to imagine, but that's where we're at. It is like building a plane while it's taking off. You know what I mean? This isn't like while it's flying. You're going down the runway and someone's screaming for a wing. That's what this is like. And I got to tell you, with still two kids in public school under my roof, I saw this as a challenge that nobody alive has had to tackle. And I wanted to do it right. Now, whether it's a one-term or two-term proposition for me, there's one chance, just one chance, to get this thing off the ground smoothly and in a way that provides the best protection for the community and the most amount of justice. And I intend to do that. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, I'm the only candidate in this race. Pete, think about this out loud. I'm the only candidate in this race who has ever prosecuted murder, rape, robbery, burglary, fill in the blankety. Experience either matters or it does not matter. And for a job like DA, I think it matters.
If you can, he's one of a kind. He's a good man, everybody. I've known him a long time. George, thanks. You went way past the time you said you'd give us, and you made the show work this morning. Thank you very much. Be safe.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, George.
Remember those victims.
I promise.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right. 303-696-1971. Open lines until 1 o'clock. I'm Peter Boyle, 710 KNUS. A lot to talk about. And the time for gearing up for spring, although looking out there, that's not spring, Peter. Yeah, it will be tomorrow morning. Arvada Army Navy Surplus. I love the place. They've been serving customers in Old Town Arvada since 1984. Great spring deals are going on. Check out their new inventory for men's and women's sandals and flip-flops from Reef and Teva and Soft. Great prices on 1, 2, and 4 men Lynx backpacking tents from Alps Mountaineering. Great deals. On 0 degree mummy sleeping bags for $65, 20 degree sleeping bags for $60 from Ledge Outdoor. Stephen and the staff, highly knowledgeable, and they'll assist you in finding all the gear you need for your next spring adventure. The store is so cool. I mean, truly is. And we went out there on the motorcycles and just wander around. Hey, look at this, look at this. Historical military gear is on display. Drop by and see them. They're Old Town Arvada. Check them out, ArvadaSurplus.com. That is ArvadaSurplus.com. 303-696-1971. First time since about 10 after 9. The lines are wide open. It's all yours, Lou. Morning, everybody. It's a Saturday, and the sun's going to come out for tomorrow, 68 tomorrow. But today it's going to be cold. Monday, 73, and Tuesday, 63 degrees. Thanks for being here. There's two lines open. There are so many topics out there this morning. It is the Columbine High School. It marks the 25th year since that day, April 20th, 1999. David Ellison, Cherry Creek, my friend, you heard me talk about taking your valuables to David Ellis Jewelers to get a fortune in cash and to secure an appraisal from David for all the valuables you have tucked away in your home. It's still true. So let me share this other reasons to see David, just in case you don't have a Rolex watch, a rare coin set, or even a silver tea set. See David Ellis for all of your most meaningful gift-giving occasions. David Ellis Jewelers, just the right items, just the right prices. Special folks, there's graduations are coming and anniversaries are coming because weddings are coming. And it's a great time to see the man, their antique watches and emerald pendants, gold necklaces, diamond rings. A trusted jeweler has been buying precious metals and antiques in Colorado for decades. Dazzling cases filled with hundreds of new and used pieces for your loved ones and loved ones will treasure. See David, David Ellis Jewelers, 6 days a week. They're right now. They're there. See for yourself. Look for the black awning on the corner of 3rd and Clayton and Cherry Creek. Explore DavidEllisJewelers.com, DavidEllisJewelry.com, or call my friend David, 303-322-8779, 303-322-8779, and tell David Ellis Peter Boyle sent you. All right, we'll go to Ted. Ted, you're on the radio show. Good morning. It's a Saturday. Thank you.
Good morning, Pete. Quick question, just a reference. 25 years ago, I was in the lobby of the New York Hilton at a conference, and the news we were getting in New York didn't identify the high school, and my son was at a high school that was troubled. And, you know, I spent all day and finally got a call through home and found out where it was. Would never have guessed it would have happened at a place like Columbine. Never. And we just have to tighten security at these schools. But, you know, I think law enforcement will tell you, you know, they can't stop everybody, but at least, you know, you tighten up the security. And I don't know whether an AI profile can help you or not, and whether you can use it or whatever, but it's just amazing why this all happens in Colorado.
Well, I think I was going to bring that up, and George brought it up about, you know, why is a lot of it, why is it here? And Columbine and then Aurora Theater, but, you know, STEM, and you can on a list of things that that guy that got loose in Boulder in the King Supers. I mean, why? And there's having knocked around these stories and really listened to the experts like Brockler and others. And I was mentioning Frank DeAngelis was with us this morning. And no matter who you, if you have the respect for people that you think have do this well, and the answer for Columbine was, we don't know. Even the tapes that I got to see some of the stuff and read some of the stuff, but George saw it all, and obviously Frank did. And you could read some of their writings and that kind of thing. I got to tell you something. I mean, for real, Ted, I can't give you a reason why these two fill-in-the-blanks would do that. There's no – what's the motive? And they're
well, you know, when you have somebody like Brockler or DeAngelis, or whoever, who are smart guys and who can figure out the answers to stuff, and I'll bet they search their minds at least 9-10 times a day when they're awake, and they can't come up with an answer. That's really, that's really disturbing, because these guys know. I mean, they have facts that, I mean, you've been exposed to some of them, but I don't know. I'm just a reader, and, I don't know how you
was on air through all of that, and then these debates started, and our so-called gun culture, that was number one, and then they wanted gun, which they now have these gun control laws. Then it was subcultures, the goths or whatever. I was trying to remember outcasts and school bullying, but and then the games, they played computer games, and then the pharmaceutical antidepressants, violence in video games and movies, and we went over all of them on radio shows. You have guests on that would talk about it, and the answer was they didn't know any more than you did. You know, I mean, and I was when I was gearing up for the show, and then I totally forgotten about the goth, you know, GOTH, the goth culture, and that was blamed. And brother, you know, like I said, if you. I don't know why they did what they did. And, you know, and the people that are close to it, you know, it's all assumption because of things they said or what they taped themselves. That maniac in the Aurora Theater, oh, my God. You know. Listen, I appreciate your call, Ted. Take care of yourself. Thank you. We go to Brian. Brian, you're on a radio show. Good morning.
Hey, Pete.
Hey, man.
You know, we all remember where we were when that happened in Colorado. It's one of those moments frozen in time for me being a native of this state. And you look back at, you just don't know. You don't
know what was
going on with these kids. We know they were troubled, obviously, but warning signs to what degree, what lengths they would go to. I mean, I've read some things that they were hurting animals. I mean, that's obviously a red flag for any sort of mental health person, or law enforcement, you know, desensitizing yourself to life, can lead you down the dark road. And I think that's where society's heading with these violent video games and music that's off the charts, violent and
sexualized. But Brian, if you think it through, and this is my conclusion, I remember at the time. How many, I remember, you know, Billy Thorpe and I were working together, and Billy was a young guy, and Billy's little brother, who now is a really successful guy in the business, but how many kids were playing computer games? How many kids were watching movies? How many kids were goths? How many kids were on pharmaceuticals? Then that would make all kinds of people become Dylan Klebolds and Eric Harris's. And that didn't happen. In other words, you know, if you're working the statistics of it, if 25, you know, young men alone do these things, then you would think at least 20 of them would turn out to be Eric Harris. It's not true.
You're right. I mean, because a lot of kids went through and did some things those boys did, and they didn't go out and become mass murderers.
Why?
And Pete, I don't know. But what do we, you know, where do we stand now? It's so sad that door, that dark door was opened for the whole country that day.
Oh.
And you know, it became almost an invitation in a really sad way to maybe this is a way to be heard.
There you go.
This is a way to be noticed, because yes. I'm not getting that for some reason. And the desensitization of life to get you there is one of the darkest places that I think our youth are today. And how do we get, where do we get them before that? I don't have the answers.
Good call. Well thought out. The answer is there is no answer. I think the answer is there's no answer, or it's inconclusive. 303-696-1971. Lou, we need a break. All right, right back after this. This is like Stronger Than Dirt. Remember that? Stronger Than Dirt. 710 KNUS Saturday morning. The weather's, well, springtime in the Rockies, and tomorrow things start straightening around. I'm Peter Boyles on 710 KNUS on a Saturday morning. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're on a radio show. Thank you and good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Man.
You know, I've been listening to this morning's show, you know, and I've been thinking about it, but I have two areas I think of clearly. There was mental illness and with those kids. But, there's another part. The parents checking out as being parents. I mean, when you hear about all of the things that they stored in their rooms and all this stuff,
mm-hmm.
And then they never, and they kept their doors locked. Yeah. I know when I was growing up, my kids, well, let me tell you, even my daughter, when things were going on, all of a sudden that lock on her door got removed when I had issues. And my boys never had locks on their doors.
No.
So, you know, that's clearly, I think, I rest some of this, I don't know how much, on the parents' responsibility of not being parents. And, you know,
remember,
as parents,
just go slow. Eric Harris is, he was going to go to the University of Arizona. They took him down to see his room. And with Klebold, as the story goes, where the cops got there, and apparently, and don't hold me to this, but as I recall in reading and listening, Eric Harris's father called the school and said, there's a shooting. I think my son's involved. And they came to the house, and he had his own lock on the door. Now, I cannot even imagine that. But and the police, there were sheriffs, actually. I think they had to move Mrs. Harris over and kick the door. They found the shotgun barrels. They found debt cord. You know, they found it all in there.
Yeah.
No,
well,
you know.
I'll just say this. Isn't that, there's a similarity between what, I mean, this and what the parents that were just sentenced to prison time.
Yeah.
One of the parents called up and said they thought their son was involved in the shooting. Just when you just said that, I'm like, clearly, again, the parents' lack of being parents had a contributing factor to this. And, you know, but I clearly, you know, there is mental illness going on, especially with these young kids and these electronic devices.
Then again,
see it all the time.
But remember what Brockler said, and it really, because one of the things that Holmes tried to get out of, and he pled not guilty by reason of insanity, and they said, okay, and George will tell you, the guy was not insane, but he was. Can you say he's mentally ill, but he's not insane, but he's sane, kind of a this following that. So, no, he wasn't. I mean, the true psychotics, I don't know if you've ever been around a really true psychotic. That's a whole different world. Like George said, he didn't go in there shooting space aliens. He knew exactly what he was doing. And
Why? The word pure evil would be
something
you go down.
So what do you do with the Germans in that terrible time truly believed they were doing the right thing. I mean, it's as twisted and black as that may sound.
Peter, you may say that, but I don't believe that. They had to get drunk every time they killed people.
No, it's not true.
Things in order to.
That is not true.
I have read that.
Well,
when they did that. As a matter of fact, when they were having to shoot people, they couldn't handle it anymore. That's why
there was two. Look, no, listen. I'll tell you what. There was a place called Wansea, and when they all gathered together, the point of it is they said it would cost too much each time they pulled the trigger. The bullet cost more, and that's one of the reasons they went to gas, was because the cost of a bullet. And as calculating and cold as that may sound, it was disgust. There's not a defense, and I'm not trying to make a defense, but I'm saying that when I hear the kinds of things that are said, and you ask yourself, did this guy think that he was doing wrong, or did he think he was doing right?
I think these kids wanted to be remembered, and as our kind of discussion.
Well, take it back to the other issue we're talking about, the grown men in the German army that were able to do that.
Again, you talk about I read a book called "They're Ordinary Men." That was the definition of the book about some of the police divisions that were taken out there, and they actually, a lot of them, reached a point where after they were doing it, they couldn't do it anymore. They became mentally ill, and some of them took their own lives as a result of it. So those that had a conscience, basically, they couldn't continue doing it. Comparing these kids to them, I mean...
But the concept of good and evil, that's what I'm asking
I mean, when you look at it, I heard Stalin used to say they're just a number.
It's just a number.
And his point was, why would I want to shoot them when I can get more money out of just working them to death?
Well, but also...
His philosophy was...
He was probably good for 6 to 10 times more people than the Nazis. Jim, I got to jump. I appreciate it. I'm on the wall. Good call. Everyone hang on. We'll come back. It was 25 years ago on this day that Columbine shooting took place. 710 KNUS. I'm Peter Boyles. This is your Talk Station 42. And the weather's starting to get a little better outside. Lou and I are back right after this.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.